Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute. If you're looking for more tips or lessons from Emily, please check out musigy.com for all the sheet music, transcriptions, albums, books, and flute lesson packages. That's musigy.com, musogy.com. Also, if you're looking for posters, fingering charts, or merch, you can head over at our merch store at store.theflutechannel.com for all your flute needs. If you want to help us on a monthly basis, you can also consider joining us over at Patreon for as little as $2 a month. This helps us make more great content for you. Check the description for more info. Now on with the show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
How's it going, Emily?
Good. How are you?
Good. So, yeah, we're back. We just want to do a little March podcast for everybody and answer your questions here live. And if you want to join us here, it's usually every other month on the last Sunday of the month. And so we'll barely be back in May, I think, right?
Yeah.
May. Yeah. Last Sunday of May. So be sure to join us then too. But right now we're going to be answering some questions live here on the channel.
But maybe soon I'd like to do another just practicing.
Yep, just practicing is another series that we do as well. That's
live.
You
as
have
well.
To be able to subscribe and see on our schedule and on our usually those are they're scheduled, so usually you'll see them in the subscribe feed.
Yeah, and so I'll pick a piece. And once I remember, we did a just sight reading, and people were sending their things. I thought that was cool too. Whatever, I'm just digressing, sorry. So I see that we already have a question from Mike. Advice for playing faster for an older flutist. So maybe we start with that.
Sure.
Okay. So, I think that usually the reason why people don't play as fast as they want is not that their fingers can't move at that speed. It's just that it's not an automaticism yet to do those types of combinations of movements. So I think practicing some technical things like scales, arpeggios, or EJ1, EJ2, I have two videos about them, I think. Where you go da 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 da, and you repeat the same five notes for a few times. And if you practice those types of things a lot, then you develop automaticism, so you don't have to think. Your fingers just move on their own. So there's that. Then I don't know if you have pain. If you have pain or... there's many things. So maybe that's for any age, basically. But like if you have pain when you hold the flute, also you might want to check for a thumb port or a bebop. The thumb port is for the right hand so that the flute doesn't rock back. The bebop, it can help with the left hand, the index finger. It can be can guide your finger to where it should be and all that. I had a student who had arthritis, and she would use that, and also she had a brace for her wrist. So sometimes you have to do those types of things to help. But even if you don't have arthritis, sometimes if holding the flute is difficult, there are some little gadgets that you can add to your flute, because if you want to play fast, the first thing is your moving fingers should not be holding your flute. So we have a pretty good video that's about how to hold your flute, where I talk about that. So make sure that like all the fingers except the thumb of the right hand are not needed for the flute to be stable. So that those fingers are free to move. They're not holding your instrument. So that's the first step. And then when you practice, it's about repetition. And I love studies. I love studies. I think you should learn a study a week, because in studies you have all those things that you learn in scales, arpeggios, scales in thirds, and all those things, but in context. And so usually I see a good improvement in my students when I give them studies. So that would be my advice for now. If you have sub questions, you can ask them. You want to read the next question?
Yeah. Well, that was a great question, Mike. Thanks so much. We get that a lot, but it's always good to refresh on that on the show. So
yeah. And also, if you don't know what to practice, we have our books are pretty good for that.
Oh yeah. Go to Musigy and get those books.
Yeah, it gives a good structure to your practice, you know, because sometimes it's difficult to decide on your own what to practice.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah. Midnight Moth, she wants to know, hi, Emily. Hi, Nick. What is your opinion on Lefrec? Have you tried them or tried it? Does it intrigue you? Did you like to go first or?
I don't think I've ever tried it personally. Did you?
Yep, I've tried them before.
Yeah, you did, huh?
Yep. They don't intrigue me very much, but it's a thing that might help others then and might not help other certain people. Like, I don't know what it really kind of does. I know what it does by advertisement, but I don't hear that. And I think a lot of people have done videos on Instagram and on TikTok and stuff like that with even an elastic band around the head joint, and it did the same type of thing or nothing really. I don't know. Like, I personally think it's a bit of a gimmick. I know we did the Woodify one, and I felt that there might have been something, but further research, being the geek that I am, I know that there used to be flutes that used to be unibody. So like, instead of three pieces of the flute, there was only one piece of the flute. And I've heard recordings of them, and they sound really different. Control and stuff like that, and even projection on them by the microphone and by everything and the recording standard, it did sound different. So there is a science to it, I guess. It's sort of bridging the unsoldered connection between the head joint and the body, the Lefrec. So that's what it's sort of kind of wanting to do. But I think you really need to have more of a two-body or even a unibody. Unibody meaning all three pieces solidified together, meaning no changes in the adjustment and stuff like that. So those are very, only certain companies used to make them. I don't even think they even exist anymore.
So how would you even tune with others?
It would not be like that. It would just be that tuning, and you have to adjust with your lips and all those things like that. So you have a lot more movability with your lips instead of with the body and the head joint and stuff like that. So,
oh my. So you also have to sacrifice a lot that you like the way the head joint is compared to the body.
Exactly.
Because not everyone puts in the same spot.
Exactly. So,
Lefrec, it's for people who don't know what it is, it's like a piece of metal that you add on the,
with an elastic, yeah.
Yeah, around the where the head joint and the body meet.
Correct.
So that
I think there might be ones now.
It vibrates better or something like that.
I can't say that. That's their goal, I guess. Yeah. Because in the end, if you play bamboo flutes or flutes that are unibody, there's a lot of unibody flutes like a shakuhachi and stuff like that. They tend to kind of even feel like you're playing the whole thing a little bit. Like, I don't know, it has a different sensation and also projection to my ear and to my feeling of playing. So even when I play on a tin whistle, which is only two pieces or maybe even low whistles that are unibody, then they sound different than playing when I play on the flute. It sounds a bit more, I don't know, just sounds a bit more smoother, feels like I can feel a little bit more of a connection. And I think that's what Lefrec and a lot of other things are trying to simulate. But take that as a grain of salt. It may work for you, but it's always worth trying. But
I'd like to try it one day, but I think, like, I'm not a scientist, but I don't see how, like, putting something outside would... Because, like, it's not going to make it more solid inside because the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a little gap in between Lefrec. There's two little divots that connect both sides and then a curve. So, you know, the more you add onto the flute, the more dead it gets because there's more absorption. I know that little rivet in the middle is supposed to kind of not be connected or touching the flute, so there's less dampening, meaning maybe there's a little more of that vibration and you know, silver, whatever you want to call it, sparkling sound that you usually get on your flute. But that's how it kind of is. It has two divots, an elastic, and a sort of a ridge in the middle to kind of let air go and not touch the flute. So,
yeah, because I don't see how like putting an elastic would make the metal, the two pieces of metal more together.
I think it's a dampening tool, to be honest, the Lefrec. It dampens instead of brightens.
Oh, okay.
But that's just a thought. It's not true. Yeah, it's not proven true. It's just that my thoughts about it. But when I further researched about unibody flutes, that was, I think, really what the goals are happening. Because
it's always difficult to know how influenced we are. You know, when we try stuff like that, like, are we being really objective or are we being influenced because we want to believe or all those things, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many studies that are interesting about that. It's like, I'm digressing, but I think it's interesting. There's this study that they have done with people have a different opinion. If you say that you're a natural or if you say that you're a hard worker, people seem to usually believe that a natural is better. And so they made people listen to pianists, different recordings of pianists, and asked who is better, the natural or the hard worker. And people were completely wrong, especially professional musicians were even more wrong than normal people, than the average person, because it was the same recording that they made them listen to. And the professional musicians were like, yes, the natural, he's way better, like his musicality and all that stuff. And they would give a lot of details on how much better this guy was. So sometimes our brain plays tricks on us. So it's difficult to know. That's the whole thing that I wanted to say.
But it's good that you're curious. It's, you know, there's a lot of tools out there and things that can help the flutist. You know, there's also just ergonomic things for the flute too, you know. So it's cool that you're curious. You can go and try things out and see how you can better your sound or how you can control your sound more. You know, there's so many things that you can do as a flutist to make your sound better. Lots of different things. So yeah, great question. We get that often. Sometimes I hear about it. I know a lot of people use them. Savannah, she wants to know, do you have advice for a classical flutist who wants to get more comfortable with playing at jam sessions? I have a lot of friends who play jazz and they always invite me to jam, but I always get so nervous.
Well, I would say maybe ask them, because usually in jam sessions, I think that some pieces come back often. You know, some of the standards. So maybe, you know, you could prepare one or two standards a little bit. And on YouTube, you can find a lot of play-alongs of jazz standards. So I don't know what you know and what you don't know, but you can look at the chord progression first, like learn your chords pretty well. Like if you see B7, to know that it's B, D sharp, F sharp, A, you know, stuff like that. And then when you want to improvise to begin with, maybe you want to know in what scale or what mode you're going to have to play. What's your tonic, stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, I think that would be the beginning. And start with something easy and go for it. You know, usually people are nice and they're not going to judge. And then you're always a note away from a good note, you know? So I would say, I would start like that. Start playing with play-alongs and then I would go in the real world. Or maybe start with one of your friends, you know, and then go to the jam session. I don't know. What do you think, Nicola?
Yeah, for sure. You know, definitely if you already have friends that are inviting you and stuff, it's always wise to just give them an email and ask if they have any C charts. of some of the tunes. You don't have to have all of them because and they can send them to you by PDF, and then try to find, you know, just find some people, some professionals, videos of people playing online and play along with them. You know, their style might be a little bit different than your friends and stuff, but you get to understand the structure. You get to understand how to trade solos and when that happens in a piece. And because there's a lot of standards that are super popular, maybe take two or three and just jam at home first and understand how people are doing it. Maybe try in a couple different keys if you're comfortable with playing in different keys, if you're that risque with playing the charts. But for now, try to find the C charts for, not fine, but have so your friends you send them to you.
C charts?
Because you want to have the chart that's in your key, like the C, like the real book has a C chart, so it's for C flute, like for any instrument in the key of C.
Yeah, because if you play the saxophone in B flat, then you even though you play in the same key, so it's just because not everyone knows what the C chart means. Like, it doesn't mean that you're playing in C major or...
No, not at all. Just means you should find the books that are in your key written out for your part on your instrument at the easiest key for you, and that's in relative to the other instruments, because like you said, you don't want to get your friend's E flat chart for saxophone. You'll have to then transpose that sheet music you get into C to be able to play it,
because the fake book is you know, like if a clarinet is playing a C, it sounds like a B flat, so they transpose everything. But flute, trombone, piano, violin, we're all in instruments in C, were non-transpository.
Yeah.
So that's it. But if you go on YouTube, you can find a lot of play-alongs that are just the accompaniment as well. So that's very useful.
And if you feel that the YouTube is a bit an intense, you know, place to find, and you find so many more options and stuff like that, and you kind of don't know where to go and start, I would go to Jamie Ebersole's website and get the first book series that he has. He has like hundreds of them, but the first ones, like the one through 10, I forget which one's the first one, but like the blues one, is a book that has the play along tracks, the charts, and even great theory and great layout on describing how to start playing jazz and how to start playing with others. And it's very, very affordable. Those are great. I have almost all of them. I've collected them my whole life. And those are great to have pre-going to a jam session. And those are super fun, too, if you want to better your classical transition into playing jam sessions with people. But remember, when you go in jam sessions, they're there to jam, have fun. You're there also that you can ask questions during break or before. And they're all usually very cool and very fun, so you want to embrace that. I don't think anything else. And listen to jazz, you know, listen to the popular tracks, like you said, on your way to, you know, way to work or whatever, so you can kind of hear how things flow and how things are. Maybe you don't have a YouTube Premium subscription, or you have Spotify or whatever, so go and listen over there too. What else? That's it. Hopefully that question answered your
I think so.
Question pretty well.
So we're at Juliana.
So was one.
Yeah, the next question.
Yeah, I think ZP wants to know.
Okay, there was another one before, but we don't.
Where was that one? How to clean my flute?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have video. We have a video on that. It's pretty great. Unless you want to grab your flute and show how to clean a flute, you want to hear? You want some of the don'ts, or do you want to take over that question?
I don't know. Just use the rod and put a very light, you know, something that's not too thick. I'm sorry. I have a...
Oh, yeah. You can definitely use something like, an old pillow cloth.
Yeah,
you can use some cotton
or something,
you know, and rip it up.
Don't make it too big, you know, so it doesn't clog inside. And then also when you do the head joint, bring the cloth on the top of the rod so that you don't scratch the bottom of the head joint. And yeah, don't make it too big, because it's gonna also, when you go in the body, it's gonna get stuck in the keys if it's too wide. And just go from one side to the other. Don't bring it back, because sometimes it gets stuck too when people do it like that.
Yeah, and like Flamingo says here also in the chat, like you can use a silk swab and stuff like that. But you want, again, something that's going to wrap around the tip of the rod very well, so that the rod is not exposed or has too much of a rough surface while you're going back and forth on the cleaning. And also you should do it often while you're in a practice session, because water accumulates, moisture accumulates rather, a lot.
Often. So,
if you're practicing some sessions, especially when there's, if you're in a humid area and stuff like that, there can be some people do leave a lot just, sometimes. So
when you're done, you take out everything before you put in the case, you clean it. You don't stop in the middle of practice, except if it's super, if it's very cold and your flute is like dripping, yeah, you stop, but you don't need to stop all the time. I don't know. I've never seen you clean your flute every like 30 minutes.
Oh, well, I'm just saying. So, yeah.
I don't know. I just think it depends. Yeah, if it's very cold and your flute is dripping, because there's more, it makes more water. But, and like, I think you also say usually not to clean too much the outside, because it kind of rubs the metal, like it removes a little bit every time.
Oh, I was just talking about the humidity, the moisture that's inside the flute.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But not necessarily sometimes outside. Sometimes people, when they ask, they also talk about the outside.
Oh, the outside's a different thing, which we can discuss right now as well, which is you should don't just do at the end of the end of your sessions, you know, and just check up on your flute, make sure there's no little micro, you know, a lot of things can accumulate in the joints and stuff like that, like little pieces of hair, little pieces of stuff, like people never tend to look at those things, but just, you know, gradually just go over with a microfiber cloth or whatever cloth, not necessarily the cloth that you use to clean the inside of your flute, but you should have another type of cloth that cleans the outside of the flute, and might not necessarily need a polishing cloth. You might need a microfiber cloth, which a lot of people have transitioned to a lot, that still leaves a shine and stuff like that, and
doesn't last the polished one, a little bit of metal, huh?
Yep. The polishing cloth is a completely different type of cloth that can remove more impurities that are more of the metallic nature, like the oxidization of it and stuff like that. But a microfiber cloth doesn't necessarily do that. In particular, instead, it kind of just removes surface and leaves a different type of shine and clean. Yeah.
For the inside, I also like cotton cheese. Yeah, that's good, because it grabs a lot of moisture.
Yeah, it's a cotton, yeah, the cheesecloth, not cheese cottage cloth. If you want to buy cottage cheese and put that inside your flute, it'll definitely
do... No, I said cotton, because in cotton. French, that's how we call it, cotton cheese. Yeah, cheesecloth, yeah, exactly. Cheesecloth,
so you just have to use, you can get dollar store cheesecloth and use that, and it works really, really well, for sure.
You have to cut it, because it's too big, but yeah, it works.
Yep, cut to size. What else do we got here? That was a great question. We get it often. And there's also, we have a video about it that goes a little bit more in depth about particular things. I might even update it eventually, because there's a couple new things I'd like to add to that. ZP wants to know, how can I learn double tonguing a bit more faster? Because I'm learning it and it isn't getting any better.
Okay. Well, the good thing with double tonguing is that you can practice it even when you're not playing the flute. So you can go taka 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 while you're doing other stuff. And I would advise you to also practice it upside down, going starting with ka. So ka taka 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 taka. And then you go back to taka 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 taka. Don't try to go fast from the beginning. Try to be equal, because a lot of beginners, when they double tongue, they go taka 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 taka. The ta is longer than the ka. You don't want that. You want equal, taka 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 ta, like a little machine, you know. So I would prioritize being equal than being fast in the beginning. Also, what you can do if you want to get faster but you don't have the endurance yet, you go taka taka ta, taka taka ta, taka taka ta. It's easier to do for a little while very fast, and then taka 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 ta, taka 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 ta. You know, And also try not to just practice the ka by itself. Sometimes it's just the ka is a new, the ka, it's just the back of the mouth, you know, kind of closing. So it's not really the tongue, I guess, or the back of the tongue. So practice it by itself. And then, yeah, then you practice it with your flute. You can double each note when you do your scales. Taka 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 ta. Like that. In the beginning. What do you think?
Yeah, you described it quite well. I'm just wondering how have you, is that how you necessarily, with your students, when they're having issues and they feel that they're not getting any better, do you feel that the instruction you gave right now is something you usually do with your students more, or there's some things that come up?
Yeah, it's what I do with my students. Also, sometimes when they go there, sometimes they over-tongue, like they over-articulate, they go like very aggressive on taka taka ta, you know? So I say use daga daga da instead. It feels closer in the mouth. And also make sure that you're blowing enough air, because when you tongue, it's that you're cutting the air. So you have to have a good air stream so that you have something to cut. You know, sometimes there's not enough air. Sometimes it's like too intense, the movement of the taka taka. It's not that intense, just, you know, it's light. So think, if you want to go fast, it has to be light. It can't be a huge movement because that takes more time. And you have to be patient because it takes time, and you have to do it a lot. Yeah.
So hopefully that answers that.
But like really first thing is make it equal. Not ta-ka-ta-ka-ta, but ta-ka-ta-ka-ta. Yeah.
Yeah. Ice Cakes, he or she wants to know, how do you circular breathe? You want to handle that?
Yeah, I'm not very good at it, but you put air in your cheeks, and while you push the air with your cheeks, you breathe through your nose. You breathe in through your nose. So you go, for people watching the video, you can see it. Some people would, now it must be more difficult to find. Oh no, you could do it with a paper straw, but you use a straw and a glass of water, and you always want to have bubbles. That's like the first exercise that people use, to always keep bubbles in the water. And then you do it with your flute. The thing is, like for me, what I find difficult on the flute, that is, I guess it's easier with a closed embouchure instrument like the oboe. But with the flute, like I feel like my sound is not as good when I circular breathe, but I haven't worked enough on it in my life. You know, I was not persistent enough with that to make it sound very good, but that's the theory of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think also for me personally, I think you got to work really hard on it. Some people just get it, but then a lot of people really work hard on it. And also just, I think a lot of it is just, and another thing you have to think about is masking it or hiding it, because it can be, I know a lot of people can do it, but they really left it to be exposed so you can hear it when people do it. Especially on like long notes, and they want to play longer notes for a longer time, you can actually hear the person breathe through, and it kind of is a distraction.
Yes,
and
it is, because you're so right.
Yeah, and I think it's the most important thing of it all. You have to hide it. You have to almost, and with any of those extended type of techniques or special techniques, you don't want the people to know that you're doing it. That's the whole genius of it, and the whole way of mastering it, is that they won't even notice that you're doing it until really the last second. And if you can do that, I think that's a way to master it, if you want my advice on that.
Yeah. Like if you're trilling and you do it, it might sound like be less obvious, but if you're holding a long note, like you were saying, it's difficult. And also, yeah, sometimes the sound quality changes when people are pushing with the cheeks while they're breathing through their nose.
Yep.
So you're like, oh, what happened there? You know, you're so right. So
yeah, some people, they work it even in their long phrases too. So you have to really be, methodical when you use it throughout the whole entire piece. I knew somebody who used it and put it inside long phrases and hid them during the progression of a phrase, so that during a little bit more of a louder, more fuller part where the piano is, they can hide that sneak of air to refill and not have to breathe where your breathing mark traditionally usually is in a phrase. So you can also use it that way. So be methodical about those things is what I always think. It's not just I've learned it and I can just apply it and it's just going to work. Unless it's so good that it just disappears and you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. Then you can do it. But
yeah.
Just be methodical about it.
But like the question was, how do you do it? So that's
there's so many exercises about it. Yeah.
Use it is another question, but you've answered that too. So that's great.
Yep. And I, like you said, with the water, and I know some flutists and other instrumentalists, I think, have systems too. I think you can go and find online that they can buy and try and develop that feeling of circular breathing. Mm. I know it's a very popular thing. People like talking about even more now online and stuff. And it's always cool to talk a little bit about it. Humberto Sandoval would like to know, is the Altes flute method a good one? Would you recommend it?
It's huge and it's old. Like, it's good, but like, I think...
And it's free.
It's free. So, yeah. It's just there's a lot in there, you know. I don't know it that well, to be honest, you know, because, what do you think, Nicola? Do you know that method well?
Yeah, it's a good method. It's a lot to print, so I would not print it. I would definitely get a PDF of it and maybe put it on your tablet or something like that just to look through it, because there's so much, and I don't think, and it's an old method that's been adapted quite a bit in a lot of other methods. Because it's been public domain for a long time, so I would use it as a reference. I know it doesn't have everything inside. I know the etudes in there are very rudimentary because to start with, which is good because it's a complete method. But once you start getting out of the methods, you start trying more different studies, more different.
Because is it that method that has like long notes for pages? And
a lot of them do. This could be one of them, yeah.
To me, it feels like people back then were more patient than we are now. So there's a lot of stuff. You know, it's kind of long before you get to do something a bit more interesting. Whereas like a more modern method might bring more context faster. But I'm not saying like it's good or not good, but it's just, if you get a method like, I don't want to preach my own, sing my own, whatever, but method like ours, it's a bit faster to get to play pieces, and you have videos to explain, and you have audio files to hear a reference.
More complete, because you don't necessarily have that with the Altes, you just have a piece of PDF.
Yeah, you know.
There's no sound examples.
Yeah, so... And there's a lot of the same exercise. I feel like what I've seen of it is a lot of pages of playing whole notes and then a lot of pages of playing half notes and stuff like that. So it's a bit long before you start doing stuff that's actually cool to do.
Yeah. And remember, like, even you have this free access to this gigantic Altes method, or let's say another example is the complete Tafanel method is also in public domain in some countries. And you know, you get that whole entire shock right at the beginning of, oh, there's 300 pages, or, oh, there's 75 pages, or, oh, is the first page of where I have to start, or, oh, it's just in, I can't read what it's saying because the scan wasn't good. I don't know. Like, you have a lot of different initial reactions with those things, but it's cool as a reference material, but maybe find a more modern method that has been inspired by all these other methods, you know, new methods like ours and maybe others as well. Kind of like you said, Emily, is to get you to understand playing faster, easier. Methodology, and like you said, people back then, lots of more time, people had a lot more patience, but nowadays we have a lot more pedagogical and a lot more education pedagogy, meaning we know how to teach different people different ways at a faster understanding. And I think that's important too. So that's something that's in your book, and also in just general general knowledge. So it's cool to have. I love them. I used to print them out sometimes and look at them and stuff, but take a look at it. It's cool that you're very curious about it.
Yeah.
Yes,
Rasul Hack asks, or Hacky, I don't know, how can I play double tonguing on bit? What does that mean on bit?
Don't know. You'll have to help to tell us.
But we have video about double tonguing, at least one. Yeah.
But Doug wants to know, why are the high notes sometimes very resistant? Now, that's a very good question.
Yeah, and there's another person saying, please help me to play Turkish March. It's my dream note, but it's very high. So two people on the high notes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, high notes are sometimes difficult. You need more airspeed in high notes, and you need to change the angle of the air a little bit. Yeah. Also, sometimes people are kind of scared, and so they kind of close everything. You know, when we're scared, we close the throat. We don't really tend to blow enough air. So you have to stay opened when you want those notes to resonate. You can't close everything and be like, oh no, this note is coming. So, yeah. You can practice. We have videos about high notes. We have at least one that's pretty okay about that. And well, Leah, so when you play high notes, it's a bit like when you sing. So if you go and you go to the as high as you can, your soft palate goes up and everything's more open and in your head, so that's kind of what you want to feel in the head, but also in the belly. If you go you don't use the same muscles in the low notes and the high notes, so you have to use those types of muscles there. So maybe play octaves like that, going like first G, second G, third G, and working on that, going up and down. And there's a very, very small movement of the lower lip going forward as you go up. But it's very tiny. It's minute. I would say like airspeed is the first thing. So you need more airspeed in the high register. And one thing that's really helpful when you want to work on controlling your high notes, I think, is using harmonics. So let's say you play a low C and you hold the fingering of a low C, and then you get the octave and the fifth and the other octave and so on and so on. You can play like five notes like that. And that's really helpful to feel how to reach those high notes. And we have videos about those things.
Yeah, we definitely do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that might be all the questions we have for this month. We can definitely answer more. If you have more, you can leave them down in our comment section below. And if you're watching this after the live fact, leave us some questions. We always like trying to bring those questions over to the next episode of the podcast, or even sometimes we even do a video on them. It might even intrigue us so much that we go and do a video and we try to release them. But we have a couple of videos coming out this month. We have another Tafanel and Gobert exercise video, which have been very popular, that we released last year. And then also we have a piccolo video, or not piccolo, but a, yeah, is it a piccolo video? Piccolo. We have a piccolo review video from Jean-Paul, a professional piccolo. So that's going to come out very, very soon. We're excited about that, where you can come and watch that and listen to that over at the channel. But if you're interested in buying a flute method, or if you're interested in playing the flute, or you want to get better at the flute, you can definitely go and check out musogy.com, musogy.com, and find our beginner method, 15 lesson beginner method, or 20 lesson beginner method, and one or the other, and also our intermediate method, which is also, I think, 20 lessons. You can find all of those methods over at that website. And if you want to even have lessons with Emily, you can definitely email us at info@theflutechannel.com, where you can get one-on-one lessons over Skype, Zoom, whatever method you like to use. Studio has some vacancies, so it's cool to get new people in the studio. And then finally, we have our Patreon. Our Patreon's been growing, and it's our entire collection of YouTube videos, including our Just Practicings, and also our podcasts, and also all of our other videos, commercial free. You can go there and pay $7 or $5 a month to get the unlimited commercial free experience of all of our content. And also you can come and talk with other flutists there and also talk with us over at patreon.com/theflutechannel. So I think that's a bit of everything. Right, Emily?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so it's been great. Nice podcast as usual, and we will be back in May on the last Sunday of May. And then also, if you haven't subscribed yet to our channel, you should definitely come and subscribe to the YouTube channel here on YouTube. And also, if you're listening to this over on Spotify or even on Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a follow on Spotify. Leave us a review after you've listened to one of our episodes, or if after you're listening to this episode, that helps us out really a lot. And we have a great podcast base of fans that have been helping and supporting us for 72 episodes already. It's been crazy. Wow. Soon we'll be 100. We'll have to do something for 100, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's about it for me.
Nice. Well, thanks for watching and asking questions.
Yeah. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.
Bye.